The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to this podcast. Thanks very much for attending the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast. Really appreciate your presence. On today's call, I have a property investor by the name of Francis Dolly. And I've seen Francis around on the circuit quite a number of times. And he's always looked like that kind of interesting guy that's come from nowhere on a property circuit and started to do really amazing stuff in a short space of time. And whenever I see that, I'm like, I've got to go and have a chat with that guy. And then what I thought was what would be a nice idea is rather than me just being able to speak to him, let's all go and have a chat to him and to see what he's got to say. So, Francis, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Daniel. Thank you very much for the introduction. That's great.
It's my pleasure. Great to have you on. So we were chatting just before you came on the podcast. And one of the things about Francis is that Francis has got a small stutter. And I thought that's really interesting because Francis speaks on stage. He does events in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. And yet he has a stutter. And what's interesting for me is that when I speak to clients about coaching, and they've got all these reasons as to why they can't do something, and yet here we've got someone like Francis speaking on stage in front of hundreds of people, and yet he's got a stutter, which could potentially stop someone. So Francis, just tell me a little bit more about the work that you do on stage and the property stuff that you teach. And then I'd like to also know a little bit about the fear about the stutter maybe stopping you, but clearly it's not stopping you.
Yeah. We got into a strategy that was called rent to rent, and we got into that, heard about it first 4 years ago and decided to investigate it. And like everybody, I think I thought it was a bit of a scam at first, but I did research, and I kind of researched things, saw that it's perfectly legal and decided to get into it. So we secured 10 properties really fast, and then a lot of our friends were asking us how, so we got a small group of them together to teach them, and then we ended up teaching for somebody else on a stage, and I think there was just a group of about 25, and then it grew from there. So the largest audience I spoke to is 1,000 now, but it's, you know, more an interview, I suppose.
That's amazing.
But it's all a bit of a surprise, to be honest. It was never really planned. It just kind of evolved and rolled out. And you know,
these 10 properties that you got right off the start, because people listening to this would be like, I so got to get me some of that. How did you do it? What did you do? What were the strategies? Obviously, we don't expect you to reveal everything, certainly you can introduce us to some of the stuff that you did that could get you started.
Have I actually stammered at all yet, Daniel? Because you just introduced me to it is peculiar.
A tiny little bit.
Yeah, because a few people are thinking, well, he hasn't got a stammer. Well, sometimes I do, and sometimes not, and it's peculiar. It sort of comes and goes. And sometimes I've said to people that I have, and I've had to pretend I have, because I spoke to him for a while and thought, oh, I've not stammered.
You know what I find funny is, on Facebook, when we're asking you to come on the podcast, you were saying, oh, I've got a stammer. I'm like, yeah, but I'm Northern.
That's right. Everybody thinks they have this thing, you know, but my thing's okay, you know. I don't care.
Yeah, it's cool.
What was the question again, Daniel? Sorry.
So the question was, how did you get into rent to rent and these 10 properties that you picked up quite
quickly? Okay. Well, I was working in the construction industry for a long time, and it was a good life, but a few things happened to change that. I found a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I'm sure you know, and I had like a mental shift. I gave that book to my daughter Emily, who just got a degree in architecture, and she had a bit of a shift as well, so she decided she's not going to spend 20 years, you know, to work for the man, I suppose, as I did. And a few things happened to me then. I looked at my life a bit, I think, and I realized that if I didn't get paid for 3 months, I'd be in quite a tough financial situation. And I'd been working at that time for 25 years, and I thought, 25 years for what? It all kind of seems to be, it was built on, to use a builder's analogy, a foundation of dust. And around that time, I also lost my mum, and then I lost my sister, which I even now am finding quite hard to talk about. So I'm just going to have a little drink of tea.
We were talking before the podcast about life and how it hits us in unexpected ways. and about how we recover from that, because I've gone through stuff, you've gone through stuff, and there's not a person listening to the podcast who's not gone through stuff. And if they haven't gone through stuff, well, you've got stuff about to come.
Yeah, life kind of hits
you. And
it's
part and parcel of life, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. So so when I lost my mum and my sister, that kind of stopped me in my tracks a bit. And I decided to reassess things. So Emily, my daughter, had found this thing called Rent to Rent, which, as I said, I thought it was a bit of a scam. But we, you know, we looked into it and thought it was amazing. So we decided to shift our attention, you know, to that. And and it was not easy, because when we got into it first, there was no trainings at all. There was no help. We just kind of, you know, it's that thing people say, they fail their way to success. So we had some mildly humiliating experiences, I would say, with agents. But we were like a steam train to that annual, because we I knew that if we didn't make a success of this, that I was going to be stuck in my industry for years, just doing the same old thing, you know, hanging doors for people, doing lofts and things. And Emily, she, you know, she'd be in the corporate world, and so between us, there was like a little pact, I suppose, that we had to, you know, to make a success of it. So even though we had a goal to get to £5,000, we had like a higher purpose, I suppose. And I think it's good to have that. You've got to have like a purpose, you know, behind it. So
you know what I would say, Francis? I would say that the pain of staying was far greater than the pain of going in and making a fool of yourself in front of the state agents.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think as well, I had 100% belief in the thing that we were doing. I knew that it was going to be good for me and Emily, of course. I knew that it was going to be good for the agent, because we're fundamentally doing their work for them free. All we need to do is, you know, persuade them of that. And I've seen the standard of the houses around, which I thought was poor. So I thought if we can improve the standard of the houses for the end tenants as well. So I knew the thing we're doing is good for everybody. So we've just got to persuade them. And if we didn't persuade them when we met them the first time, and they were kind of in our face, I thought, that's okay, we'll just go back again and again and again. And one person in particular, I better not say her name, I guess, just in case, but she disliked us. But I kept going back. I was professional, friendly, and now she's given us how many deals? She's given us about 8, I think. And, you know, we're mates.
Persistence.
Yeah, sure.
Persistence is really underrated, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
huge, actually.
You never give up.
Yeah. But, we just trucked on and on and on. So then we got to the end of the first 6 months, and we secured 10 rent-to-rent deals that were generating £5,000 a month. But it was a bit of a mess behind us. There was things to go back and fix and to tweak, and we had to give some of the properties back as well, because it was in the wrong patch. And so you make mistakes at the start, but I think it's okay to make mistakes. It's how fast and efficiently you're able to fix them and get again, you know, and move on.
Yeah. And so you went in and negotiated with the state agents for a rent-to-rent deal. Is that right?
Yeah, because with rent-to-rent, the best thing is to go direct to the owners, of course, because you know how to deal with the agents. But I think if you look for owners of a property, I always think it's like you go to the edge of the sea and you try to fish, and you could be sat there for a long time before you get a bite. Whereas if you go to an agent, it's like you go into Sainsbury's, you know, to the fish store, and all the fish are there, all the fish you want. You've just got to know what to say to the staff to get them to help you. You know, so I think that's my analogy. Out of the way, I don't know if it's a good one or a bad one.
It's a great analogy, Carly.
Yes. So we got our first deals through agents. We got the first 10. And even now, I would say we get 75% of our deals through agents. You know,
amazing.
And we only work with 3, and predominantly with 1, maybe 2. Yeah. So
was there an educational need that you have to give to the estate agent to explain that you're not sort of scamming them in some way, or that you're official and this is what you do for a living? And just talk to me a little bit about that.
Oh yeah, completely. Because when you go and talk to the agents, they've either not heard of it at all, so you've got to start from the starting it. Explain the whole thing through to them, and if they're not sure about a thing, then their kind of reaction is to say no, and then you get the other agents who've kind of heard of it and they've got a vague understanding of it, but they're also a bit scared, I suppose, scared to do the wrong thing in the office. So often it's a bit of a long-term kind of educational thing with the contract tracks as well, because we go into the agents, they're the experts. So we step on eggshells, and when they offer us the contract that they think is the right contract to use, and we know it's not the wrong contract to use, then you can't just say, well, actually, mate, you know, it's the wrong one, and it, you know, because they're supposed to be the experts. So you just say, oh, that's a very interesting contract. Yes, we've got this other one that we use. I think it's better than that one. So we'll send it over to you as an email for you to have a look and stuff. Yeah. And you just got to fish away kind of around. But a big thing with agents is to make them understand that you're fundamentally doing the work for them for free. Because we take over properties often that are already set up for students. So the agents have to deal with all those students, and in a property, if there's about five or six, it's all those viewings, all the ASTs to sign, people not paying rent, and it's just, you know, it's endless work for them. So we come along, we take the property off them, the agent only deals with us, and we deal with all the problems in the house. But of course, we don't actually have problems in the house because we're good, you know, so the problems are just stop. So we're doing the agent's work for free, and they still get paid. And then sometimes we also offer the agents like an extra fee. So they will get a fee off the owner of the property. And when we offer to pay them a fee as well on top, and that kind of gets them on the hook a bit more. But sometimes the process can take like a month or 2 months. You know, you've got to keep going back to them.
So do you do it as a corporate let, effectively, where you're renting from the estate agent or letting agent? The agent just sends a copy of the tenancy agreement to the owner. From an owner's point of view, do they know that then you're subletting? So is it all completely transparent? How does that work?
Oh, yeah, completely. We have that conversation with the owners or the agents in the first call. So we make it completely clear, because I know there's some guys out there who just talk to the agents to get them to the house to view, and then need to tell them what they want to do. And if that's not something that the agent's prepared to do, I think you burnt your bridges there, and also you're wasting your time. So it's good to screen them a bit on the calls. So we just say stuff like we relocate professionals into the area. So it's a language that they understand and they can respond to that. We started off using the wrong contracts for the first house or two because we weren't sure, but then we switched over to a management contract, and we're pretty much the same as an agent. We're like a specialist HMO agent.
I agree. Yeah. Like a relocation agent, effectively, but just for HMOs.
Yeah, that's it.
So I just want to clarify a couple of terms. So HMO is a house of multiple occupation. That's like four people in the same house, each on usually a unique tenancy agreement. Sometimes you might get four or five people all on the same tenancy agreement. They're usually students, so they move in as a group, move out as a group. Or more of a professional type of HMO, for professional specifically, is where each person is on its own room tenancy agreement, not the house tenancy agreement, and it's all individual contracts. Mm. And then the other bit of terminology I just want to clear up is on rent to rent. So this is where you're renting it from someone who owns the property, and then you sublet that out to usually HMOs, I'm guessing. And you specialise in just HMOs anyway, Francis, is that right?
Yeah, we've got a few single lets, I think. We've got about... I think eight, but we're switching everything over to HMO because the income off those is huge compared, I think. The last single let we bought, we actually paid 70,000 for it. I was going to offer it. It was on the phone. I was going to offer them 72, but I got stuck. And so I said 70, and then there was a big pause, and the agent said, yeah, that should be okay. So having a stammer that day actually saved me $2,000.
I love it. I just love it.
Yeah. So I just went, shut up. and we make about £250 a month from that one. Well, last year, the fence blew down on one side in a storm. The border blew up. And that dropped the income on that property over the course of a year to £80 a month. And then if the interest rates increase and we get some more bills, it's almost like we're doing it for nothing. Whereas the HMOs, the first one we did, we put $3,000 into it, and I'll talk about that some more if you like. And we were making £600 a month. So now we're
and
making
not
a, hmm, sorry,
not liable for repairs as well, I imagine, because the landlord is.
It depends on the contract, but we tend to pass everything back to the landlord, because I know there's some people out there doing rent to rent where they agree to fix the whole thing, the roof, the house, the whole thing. I think that's crazy. So we're very precise on the contracts that we use and the things that we're responsible for. I just believe that the property belongs to the landlord, and even though you're acting as an agent, you're also his tenant. You're like a kind of hybrid of the two. So the property's got to be in a good state for the landlord to rent to you. So we also make sure the landlord pays for most things, everything if we can. But
if something's going to break down, it's your boiler. And yeah. As we know, boilers, I never realised, no one ever told me when I started investing 17 years ago that I would become a connoisseur of boilers. a collector of fine old boilers that are going to break down and cost a fortune. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah, yeah. No one ever tells you that on a property call.
No, true, actually, no.
But tell me more about this deal that you put $3,000 in.
Well, when we started, we thought we had to put deposits in, so we put in a deposit in Bristol on average of £1,000, and then say the first month's rent would be £1,000. If you had to do a refurb on the property, we spend between £450 and £2,000. That's all we spend. So say the refurb on that one's £1,000 as well, and then you've got the agent's fee. So we're spending about £3,500, say. But these days, our mindset has altered completely. So we think we don't have to put deposits in. And the way we stopped that the first time was we said to the agent, we don't put deposits in. And they said, oh, okay. And it was as easy as that. It's just crazy. and then we try not to pay the first month's rent until the property is all set to go. So if there's some work to do, we ask the agent or the owner if we can delay the first month's rent for 3 weeks, say. And then we get into the house like a steam train, get the work done as fast as we can, get the rooms let, get the money off the guys, and we use that to pay the first month's rent. So
I love it.
So far now, we've not put a deposit in. And there's if the landlord's a bit reluctant on that, there's a lot of things to do to persuade him, but I don't think we've got time to go through all that today. So we haven't put a deposit in. We haven't put in the first month's rent. We get the landlord to pay for as much of the refurb as we can. And we buy stuff like the last 41-inch TV I got, I paid £25 for. Mega cheap, of course, off eBay, but I go onto eBay to find the things, but I use another site to buy them and then another site to collect the things as well. I've got that really systemized.
I love the systems. Yeah,
yeah, big time. Yeah, I bought 2 3-piece leather sofas, or my man did, last week for £23. That's £11.50 each, and they're immaculate.
How are you getting sofas for £23?
I'll tell you, it's okay. I'm just open with it all, Daniel. So,
we
use eBay as like the window of the shop, so we look in the shop and see the things we want, and then there's like a sniper site that we use called Gixen, and that's G-I-X-E-N, and then you don't actually bid for anything on eBay at all. You cut and paste the number out of there and bid it on Gixen, and you can bid for things in streams. So then you put them all on, you go off to bed, you get up the next day, and you see the things you bought, and since we were using the sniper site, our success rate increased by loads, and then we had to transport the things to the house. So we found this other site called Anyvan, A-N-Y-V-A-N, and they're kind of linked to eBay. So you cut and paste the number off eBay, send it over to Anyvan. They bid to get your job, and then you do that a few times till you find the guy who's good for you. So I've got my man Wayne from Southend, and then I phone up Wayne, or my guy Will. He phones up Wayne then to go and collect the thing. Wayne puts all the things we buy into his store until we get the house and we've got the house all done. Then we call Wayne up again and ask him to bring the things from the store, put them all into the house. So I've not put my hands on it at all. It just kind of appears in the house, and the bargains we get are just insane now.
They are insane. Mm. What's really interesting for me, there's two things I want to point out for people listening, is the first one is just this idea of, you've got this idea and you know where you want to get to, more or less, so you get off your butt and you just go do it. No idea about what you're doing, but you're just making it up as you go along, at least in the beginning.
That's it.
Sure, right? And I love the fact that you just get up and go do something. And I think as you get older, you tend to do that less, because you start to worry more I think it's like a U-curve, actually, for me.
Yeah.
I started like that as well, and then I started to care more about what people think, and now I just don't care what people think.
Yeah.
If people love me or hate me, it's not up to me, it's up to them, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and even if you look a fool, so I always say you get paid twice, the first in experience, the second in cash.
Yeah,
everybody
yeah.
wants the cash, nobody wants to do the experience.
Oh, right.
But you can't get the cash until you make a fool of yourself and you go do it.
Yeah, right? Pretty much, yeah.
So I love that. And then as you grow that and you get experience, you then start to implement systems. And it's for systems that will grow your business.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. And it's kind of hard at the start, I think, because we hit a tsunami of opposition, you know, from everyone. And I used to go into the support groups, and I was being attacked all the time, nastily. There were some quite nasty kind of people on there. But yeah. if you believe in yourself, I think, if you totally believe in yourself and you believe that the thing you're doing is good and you've got your big purpose, and for me it was Emily, really, is my big thing, because I didn't want her to have to go through 25 years of a job that I did, a slog, you know, because it's a slog. Yeah. Having to get out of bed, my alarm clock was set every day for kind of 6:30, and I'd be up out of bed if it was wet or shiny or rained, you know. I recall once I sliced my hand and I had to have an operation on my hand. It was on a Sunday. So I had the operation on the Monday, and the guy said, well, you're going to be home from work probably for a month or probably 2 months, you know. And I was back to work on the Tuesday with my hand just sort of strapped out, because I was self-employed. I kind of had to, you know. And it was time for me to get out of that, to break the whole mold, I think. I think a lot of people are trained to think that you have to do this, you have to go to school, then you have to get a job, then you'll get some sort of pension perhaps, you know, and then you retire and you're forgotten, you know. And I think it's time to, you know, to stop that. Life's too short, I think, isn't it? To care, as you said, it's too
short. I think you're right. And I think you've sort of shown what the trigger was, because you mentioned it earlier about your mum and your sister. And I think there was a third trigger, which was this, and you've just said it, life's too short. The third trigger was this, I'm not doing this anymore. Life's too short. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
And for people listening, what is that trigger for you? It's like, you know, however old you are. So I'm 42 now, quite a young 42, I like to think. That's just me, right? So, but, you know, we got married. We moved to Spain, for example. We went to Thailand on holiday. And then we moved to Spain 2 years ago. And it's, you know, it's had ups and downs, because it's not easy moving to Spain. You know, you've got family back in the UK. I've got kids in the UK, for goodness sake.
Yeah,
so that's not easy. And I fly back every 2 weeks. And there's always reasons as to why you shouldn't rock the boat. But you don't want to get to, 90 years of age on your deathbed going, I didn't do this and I didn't do that. And it's, I think that's the bit that's really important. And especially when you have children, I see it as being my job to teach my children not to make the same mistakes I made. And I think you're quite similar on that.
Yeah, yeah.
I also believe that in going through those mistakes, you learn, and you wouldn't have learned those lessons unless you had them. So on one hand, I don't want, you know, my kids need to fall off the bikes and hurt themselves, because they need to learn about that, you know. I don't want to protect them from that completely. But also that programming, that indoctrination that they're already getting at school at age 6, 7 and 10 now. We've got to change that for our children, I think. And when people go, and I just spoke to a client a couple of days ago, a potential client, who's like, oh, I'm too scared to do anything because I've got kids. And it's like, actually, it should be the opposite way. You should be too scared to stay where you are in one job with a crappy boss telling you, do you know what, you're redundant, mate, off you go.
Yeah, and then you're stuffed. I think that if you're a true entrepreneur, it's the only safe job that's out there, to be honest. You know, because you can look after yourself, and you're able to look after your family no matter what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. So the thing, you know, I stammered a bit then, but the thing with me is I knew I could stand up and do more, because I like to help people. I think it's a bit, you know, it's a big thing. And I knew I could, but the stammering kind of held me back. And I had this voice was saying, no, you can't do that. One day I said to myself, yes, I can. And the little voice was gone, I think. And now, I stand up and talk to people. And, you know, it's great. We built a community as well. So I'll tell you about the community in a bit when we get there. But,
you know that voice, by the way? I call that voice the Daily Mail.
Oh, yeah.
Because everything in it is rubbish.
Yeah, it's true.
Just lies. And it's a bald-faced liar. You know, that little voice that says, you can't do it, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
It is a complete and utter liar. Because here I am living in Spain, and I am good enough, because I'm here. Well, I'm doing it. You're wrong. I'm sorry. But Mr. Voice, Mr. Daily Mail, you're totally wrong.
Mm.
Just because the masses listen to you doesn't mean that you're right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and for me, that was the key, was recognizing that little voice that you can't do something.
Yeah.
So now you stand up and you speak at events to help other people, which I think is wonderful as well.
Okay.
Because being able to give back to people who are less fortunate than yourselves,
yeah,
I think is really important. I have a homeless charity. It's called the Lufia Project, after baby Lufia, my six-month-old baby.
Oh, wow.
And we go out and hand out backpacks to people sitting on the streets who are homeless, especially in winter.
Oh, amazing.
And
it
costs £20 for a backpack. We raised a couple of £1,000 now, and we do it in Leeds. But other people, we've had them in Birmingham, in London, people seeing what we do, and they go out and do it.
Oh, great.
I think it's amazing.
And what's actually in them, in the pack?
In the backpack, we put pants and socks, because if you think about a homeless person and how often they change underwear is quite rare. Think about that. It's not overly pleasant. We have toothpaste, toothbrush, because even toothpaste, it's like, we say to them, you know, if it's raining or whatever and we're feeling a little bit down, just open the cap, have a little bit of toothpaste, and just to try and change how they're feeling.
Yeah.
It's about, we call it a pattern interrupt, really.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got toothpaste, toothbrush, we've got some little snacky things like cereal bars, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We have hand wipes, so that we can at least sort of have some sort of a wash of some kind.
Yeah.
We have gloves and socks. We've got polo mints as well.
Yeah. So
just little things like that. And it costs £20 a bag. We hand out as many as we can. The difficulty for us is actually going out and handing them out. It takes up a lot of time. But I take my two children with me because it's important for them to understand that not everyone is as fortunate as we are. That sometimes, you know, people just need help. And in speaking to the people on the street, I'm like, so tell me a little bit about what happened. And they were like, well, I got booted out by my girlfriend and that was it. I had nowhere to go. I've got no parents. My friends couldn't put me up because they all had kids. I had nowhere to go. And I was like, well, what were you doing? I was an engineer.
Wow, yeah.
And yeah,
life,
normal
life.
People, life, it takes it out of you. And that's what we were saying before. What's the trigger that's going to make you go and do something?
Yeah.
And interestingly, you don't need a trigger. You don't need something bad to happen in your life. But often, the people I speak to that are very successful have got something, a pain that they're moving away from.
Yeah, you need to fix it,
That they've got to fix, and they fix that by going out and saying, no more, I will no longer be that person. Another example of a trigger point is someone who's overweight and on the beach, and they get a picture taken of them, and they're in a bikini or swim shot, and they just look huge, and they go, oh my God, I look like a beach whale, I'm not doing that ever again.
Yeah.
That's the trigger.
Yes.
And you know when someone says something nasty to someone, whilst that is nasty, that could have been what they needed to hear.
Yeah. The honesty.
That's their trigger point.
Yeah,
the honesty. And we don't have that anymore because we're too politically correct sometimes. Sometimes you need to be told, what the heck are you doing? You're worth more than that. Go do it. You know?
I have to ask you then, Daniel. The pants that you put in the backpack, are they boxer shorts, wife fronts? Who decides that? Because if you give them the wrong pants, you might think, well, I can't wear these. And they're not my style.
Yeah, no. We have three pairs of pants for a start. If a homeless person is worried about the style of the pants, then they've got bigger issues than because it's probably they've made a choice, I would suggest.
Yeah.
But we'd give a large and medium in each one. So like two mediums, one large, two large, one medium. If they're a bit baggy, you know, they can swap them with other people. What's cool is we've walked past people who are homeless and they're still homeless because it doesn't solve homelessness after giving out a backpack.
No.
But they look at you and they go, all right, mate, but don't ask for money, but recognise what you've done. And it's amazing. It's very warming. It's very fulfilling.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I love it, actually. Yeah, that's great.
The whole point behind it, Francis, is to give hope.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's what we're giving. We're not giving backpacks. We're not giving pants. We sit down next to them and we go, so what happened? One guy played his music too loud and he was in the council house and he got completely, he had his three warnings and then that was it. He was out. He's now homeless.
Mm.
So I said to him, I didn't give him much sympathy, quite honestly. I just said, because I've got tenants that do that, drive me nuts, right? So I said, well, that was a bit daft, really, wasn't it? He said, yeah. So we future-paced him, and I said, well, what would you do next time? Turn it down? Yeah. It's not difficult, is it? No. And he looked at me like I was being a little bit nasty. And maybe I was, but someone had to tell him.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Being made homeless because you put your music on too loud. Put headphones on and you listen to it as loud as you want, you know.
Mm.
So it is pretty cool, we especially involving the children, and then people see it on Facebook. So just to give the website address if people are interested, if you go to facebook.com /the Lufia. Lufia is L-U-C-I-A, so Lucia project. Lufia's a Spanish baby, I suppose. Me and my wife are both English, but she was born here in Spain, and she will live here in Spain. So she's got a Spanish name. She goes to a Spanish nursery. Yeah. She'll go to a Spanish school. She'll speak English and Spanish better than we will.
Yeah, for sure.
And so when we had the baby, I wanted to do something that represented that and to help other people that are not as fortunate as we are.
Yeah.
And I think everyone should go out and help some sort of charity. We've got another one that we're doing. A lady's got a child who's got autism. She's raised £1,000 already. She needs to raise another £1,000 because he needs like a wooden playground thing in his back garden. Because he's got autism, he can't go to a play centre because loud noises and sort of things freak him out and so on. And it will grow with him, this item. So we need to raise £1,000. We've raised about £200 extra for her. So we've got another about 900 quid to go, really. But I love doing that, going out and helping people who think the world is maybe against them in some way.
Yeah.
Or is a darker place than it really is, because it can be filled with beauty.
Yeah, I believe that.
And
that
that night of that. And it's just important to give back, really. I think it's...
I should look at that. I should have a look at it. We're off the call then, Daniel. That's interesting. Yeah, really good.
I'll stick it on the podcast page as well with the links to my website, your website, and the Lufia project and so on, and people can take a look at that. Okay, so in terms of being financially free then, you're there, right?
I guess so, yes. Yeah, there's always more to do. Because if you hit like a milestone, you'll set your eyes on the next one. So I guess I'd like to help my family some more. So Emily, in four years or 3 years, has gone from being having about £500 in the bank. Now she just bought her own house, and they're fixing it up. They're kind of halfway through that. Just got herself a dog as well, so she loves her dog. Mm-hmm. And most of all, she's got herself a fiance as well. So she met this great guy, and she's getting married in December. So even though I thought I was financially free, I think come December I'm going to be skint again. So we'll see. But it's good. It's good to be in control of your own time, I think, and that for me was the big one.
Do you know, that's interesting for me, because there's lots of people, gurus, shall we call them, out on the circuit. Yeah. And they've got very nice cars, very big houses and so on. But then they're working 60 and 70 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I wake up on a Monday morning, I go for a swim in the sea, which is 8:30 in England, because that was important to me to, when people are stuck in traffic, I want to be swimming in the Med. That was my values, that was really important to me.
Feels good,
on the
book
list. Yeah. It does, yeah. And so there's a new type of wealth. It's not financial wealth. It's time wealth. Mm. You get to see, I see Lufia every day. We spend every day with each other. It's awesome, right?
That's amazing.
And people can't do that if you go to work 9 to 5, because it's not 9 to 5. It's 7 till 7, isn't it?
Oh, it kind of destroys all your energy, I think, as well. It's the energy thing.
Yeah.
I think for me, if I go back a long time ago, when my dad died 20 years ago, I think, and I was a carpenter, and I couldn't, spend as much time as with my dad as I'd prefer to, because I thought I had to go to work for people, and then I kind of forgot about that. Then when my mum died, I'd done the same thing, because by that time I'd got myself a van and a few blokes to work for us. Sometimes on building sites we had 7 to 10, so it was crazy. And I bought a big old barn to convert and a farmhouse, and I got entrenched a bit with the bank because the barn didn't sell. So when my mum died, again, I was doing all the hours I could trying to keep my head above water. But we did get the barn sold, and but then I think from that as well was one of the times when I decided that I'd kind of had enough of my time. When I got up in the morning, I wanted to decide how I was going to spend my own time. And my day starts a bit the same as yours. I like to go up, and I've got a little gym in my house, and I'm going to go for a run, which, trying to keep fit. It's funny, I drive around, I've got a black Honda. I haven't got the red Ferrari that everybody talks about, because I'm just not particularly interested in cars, to be honest, For me, it's just the time. And somebody else I was talking to in the week, they said, if rents weren't so good, how come I'm going so slow? Because the houses, we've got around 20 now, so I suppose, And I know guys have got 100, but I said, I'm just not interested in that. I don't want to create like another huge job for myself, because it's all about quality, if your life is as well. So I'm kind of happy to grow just nice and steady, nice and easy, and help as many people as I can along the way as well. That suits me.
Yeah. I've been there. I bought the yellow Porsche, the convertible.
Yeah.
And it's an awesome car to drive, and it's wonderful. After 6 months, you get in it just like driving any other car, because it's normal, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, we bought for 45, we sold 18 months later for 28. We lost all that money on depreciation.
Yeah.
Tires are £200 each, and we went from six of us in 18 months. Mm.
It's a drain, isn't it? Yeah.
It is a massive, massive drain, and it's only now when I look back, and you know, we're going to go sailing, for example, in the summer. Just around the corner from our house, which is amazing when you say that.
Yeah.
I've got a big smile on my face because it's like, oh, that sounds so cool. And it is cool. And it's like, wow, I get to do that whenever I want. And it's amazing. But people get stuck in this idea of what success is, which is a big car, a big house, lots of staff, lots of responsibility. And I just went totally the opposite way. I didn't want any staff. I've got no one who works for me apart from I outsource some stuff to India and that sort of thing through Fiverr or Elance and so on. But I've got no one who reports into me. I don't report into anyone else. Life's really simple and easy, and I get to do what I want, when I want, with who I want. Well, that to me is financial freedom.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Other people need the Ferraris and the big houses, but I think it's just a phase that they go through. I don't know if you get more mature. I just don't know. You know, there's still other gurus who have the Ferraris. It's just not for me.
Yeah, it's right for them, I suppose, if it's a good fit for them. But I think, you know, the big thing is to... I think with Emily, when we set out on the path, she needed, was it £1,000 a month to be financially free?
Yeah.
She cancelled everything she had. She cancelled the membership in the gym that she was sorry over there. She cancelled her magazines and stuff. So, it's kind of easier to get into a good position first where you're financially free, and then you've got the space to build. Because if you've got to drag yourself off to work every day, it sucks all the energy out of you, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need to cleanse yourself a bit at first, I think. Cleanse your life, I think, you know.
I agree. In fact, when I do coaching, we've got three rules. And the rules to financial freedom are, number one is cut costs. Number two is generate cash. And number three is invest the rest.
Yeah, that's the way.
All three are absolutely needed for financial freedom. And I had a client and he was earning £5,500 a month. Fabulous. Until you realise he's spending six.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single month. And we went in, we cut costs. He had a lovely BMW. We got him to get rid of that. And his wife had a lovely car. His kids are at private school and they're still there. But what was important was for him to cut his costs. He's now saving £1,600 a month. And I said, just imagine in 10 months' time what having £16,000 in your bank is going to feel like. And now I can start to invest that.
Mm.
And it's a massive transition. All that happened in 3 or 4 months of working with a coach.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about your coaching and the trainings that you offer. Because obviously there's people listening going, if Francis can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
There's nothing about me and you that is so, we like to think there is, but there isn't, that is so unbelievably amazing that other people can't replicate what we do. We just went out, we tried it, we found a system that worked, and we repeat it, and we can then teach that to other people. So tell me a little bit more about how people can find out about what you do and copy what you do.
Well, I think the first thing I think is to get yourself educated. When I did my first training, I told my wife it was a free day because she thought I was completely crazy, but it was actually £100, and we drove down to Heathrow. And that was my first training, the first time I paid for any education at all. And that was 4 years ago. Now I reckon I must have spent around £30,000 in education. Yeah. And to hear myself saying that even sounds odd, but I think once you realise the value of education, I think it's something that you're going to plug into for life. So I'm very careful how I spend my cash. I always like to say that it's good to earn £3 back pound you spend. I think is a good rule. So we started doing our own training. So we've done with somebody else for a year, and then we're doing them independently. I've been doing them now for 3 years. So I've got my little team, as you have. I've got some friends who've been on our events before, because we find a lot of the guys like to come back to help. We're building, you know, community.
Yes.
We've got a really good support group on Facebook. I think it's about 600 on there. Most people say on trainings that the people who get results, you know, it's a small percentage. I don't know if you know the percentage, Daniel. People say
no,
10% or so. But
isn't it?
Yeah, it's really small. But I think that's because they don't have the support. So in our group, I reckon it's probably about 40%. You know, because the guys keep coming back saying they've got deals. Last week on Thursday, There was four guys popped up, done a deal for the first time, and then there was two more popped up on the Friday. I mean, you know, it's constant. So we hold a reunion as well. So we've done this twice now. The first year, there was about 300 people in the group, and 100 came back, which I think is amazing as well. And then we moved it to London last year, and it was all a bit expensive. And there's about 70 or 80, I suppose. So we've learned from that. Don't go back to London again, you know. But I think the training's got to be hand in hand with the support, because the value in that is immense. And we do spend a lot of time on that, a lot of time, because some people are talked you into the group, but some people are a bit unsure, so they want to talk to you behind the scenes.
Of course.
And then along the way, we've been building other things. We've got like a manual, which is awesome. A lot of people buy the manual on its own, and they find that's enough to start them off, and then they connect with the group afterwards. And then I got this property manager who's come to work for us now called William. He's 25, and he's not had a void in a room for 2 years, which that is just amazing, because we're just on it. So then we created a mini manual about that, and we gave that to the guys in the group. Then people were asking us how we employed Will, so we created a mini manual about that as well. So we're creating this big kind of educational, abundant kind of atmosphere, yeah. I think. A family.
And these are the systems family that we talked about. And a family, yeah, that family is really important, I find. I've got my own VIP group for my clients, and people go out of their way to help one another, and I love it. Yeah. I love to see it.
It's amazing to see that, isn't it? Abundance. Isn't
abundance,
it?
Yeah, yeah, rather than scarcity. Try and hold your cards. Yeah. And this is, you know, when I do the interviews on the podcast, everyone's so open about, and you have been as well, you know, with the stuff that you've given already. And we love it. And it just pays off, you know, because people come back anyway and want more. And they join your group, and they then go out and help other people in turn.
Yeah, yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah. If you can be the instigator of that, you know, I think it's a changing the world to the way that we, you know, be the change you want to see in the world sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, to get access to that group then, is that a free of charge group, or is it part of a membership scheme?
No, unfortunately it's not free, because you've got to come on the training. We did open the doors up in the early days, but we find because we want the people in there to have already been through the training, so they kind of understand it a bit. Otherwise, if you let people in before they do the training, then it seems to get a bit bogged down with things, people asking. Yeah. So we like people to come on the training day first, and we've got a one-day intensive training day. We did one Saturday just gone, actually. It was in Bristol, and we usually have we have about 35 there, because we think it's a good size, you know, to learn. I've been on some events and the rooms are just really packed and you can't really see the speaker, you can't connect, it's too big, but 35 I think is a good size for the energy as well, so, you know.
I agree. Yeah. And are you running another one of those later this year?
We do one every 2 months, those ones.
Great.
Yeah.
And people get information about that?
Well, you can go to the website first, which is www.multiletcashflowsystem.com. And there's some free videos there on the homepage. You'll see a video of me and my shiny face and Emily. So we made a video. It's on the homepage, which kind of explains some more. And you can download some videos as well for free. And you can get a section of the manual as well for free to see if it's sure, you know, if it's going to be a good fit for you, because it's not going to be a good fit for everyone. So yeah, you get a lot of information on there and connect with us. We've got a public Facebook group as well called MultiletCashflowSystem.com. Yeah, and start to talk a bit and ask, you know, if we can help you in any way.
Perfect. You know, the Facebook group, is that facebook.com/multiletcashflowsystem?
The public one is, yeah. And the private one, yeah, you know, you wouldn't be able to find that, I think. So obviously it's a hidden one.
It's a closed group.
Page. Yeah.
And in terms of, is that one day training then, these events that you run?
Yeah, we run the main event. It's a 2 day event first. Because I don't think you can learn it all in one day. It's like a new industry. I don't think you can learn it all in 2 days or even three. But this guy I was talking to in the support group, he did the course a long time ago, about 3 years ago, and he said for him it feels as if the course has, you know, has gone on and on. He said he's had like thousands of days of support. So the intro course is a 1 day event, and it's just an intro. It's an intro into everything. And we give everybody the contracts, the scripts we use. You get to meet the guys in the group, which I think is also awesome, I think, you know, to network. We also, what we do, we get the postcodes off everybody before they come to the event. And in the afternoon, we sit people on a table with people in their same postcode or as near as we're, you know, as we're able to get. And we find there's lots of partnerships are formed then, you know, actually in the group. Because working alongside somebody who's going to hold you accountable, as you know for sure, is, you know, is the best thing. So we try to give everybody everything, you know, everything they need, give them the big support, connect them with people inside their groups. We try to push everybody on as far as, you know, as far as we can. But at the end of the day, I think you said it, you know, as well at the start, at the end of the day, it's down to them to decide that they're the ones who's got to take action.
What sort of price is the one day?
Yeah, we've got the full price is £737. And we've got an early bird price of £617. And when you see what you get, we always give feedback forms at the end of the day, and everybody just says, wow, this is amazing, because most deals people get are earning £600 a month from, and they're earning that £600 month after month after month. So to set the price at £617 to get, you know, to get in the door to learn the info, you know, we think it's a bargain, you know.
No, I agree. What's interesting is, you know, some people may go, oh, no, I can't afford that. But to start any business, which is what property is, and we've discussed that, to get into any business for 600 and odd quid, I mean, you just can't do that anywhere.
No.
Plus the fact that you can do this over a weekend, and then you, on Monday, you're hitting the ground into estate agents. By Friday, you got your first deal.
Yeah, it can be.
And it
can be,
happen that quick. And I'm sure it has happened that quick for a number of your clients.
Yeah, there was a lady on the last event. She could have the manual in advance, and then she stood up and she said, I've actually done my first deal before we did the event. And everybody's like, wow, that's amazing. And it's quite, you know, inspiring as well, because everybody's going to think, well, if she can, then I can.
I agree. And it's inspiring for you as the trainer.
Yeah, it's great.
Because you know ultimately that you're helping other people get what they want out of life. And I love it. It's wonderful.
Mm.
So just talk to me about, what does your day look like? So you talked about you get up and you go for a run or go to the gym. Mm. Just give me an example of a typical day, because I'm always interested about how people run their lives, you know.
I'd say my days now are never the same at all, it seems. Like, we did an event last Saturday, so we had to prepare for that the week before. I'm off to France today, it seems. I'd kind of forgotten that, but I'm off to France with some property friends, you know, today. We did our London events a couple of months ago, so it was all the preparing for that. We're doing a little boot camp out to Portugal in September. So we were over in Portugal doing a little trip to make sure everything's okay before that. So
yeah, because you need to go over and check where the bars are.
Not the bars, Daniel, the hotel training rooms. that's all we're interested in.
Sorry, that's what I meant.
but today, I suppose, I get up about 7 o'clock, I suppose, at 7:30. I've got a little gym in my house downstairs, because I've got a bit of an injury in my back, and if I go for a run outside and slip off the edge of the curb, I'll be in agony. So unfortunately, I can only go for a run on a machine, but that's fine, you know. So I run my 5K kind of twice a week, or sometimes three times. Then I have some breakfast, read a book for a while. I try and get in the office by about 8:30. I don't turn on my emails. I've learned not to do that first thing. So I decide on the project that's most important and work on that for an hour. Marketing for me for the events as well is a big thing. So I spend about an hour on that. And then I might call my property manager, Will, call Emily, just, you know, to catch up with them. I try and condense my emails to 20 minutes. If I can, do a little bit of work on Facebook and all those kind of things. Then I go back to the project that I'm on. Something I found, when I used to multitask, I would be doing a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And what I found I was doing is I was doing all those things badly. So now I've kind of stopped that, and I decided to focus on the one thing, to get the one thing done. And that's increased my productivity by loads. And then I try to get out of the house as well, because today in England the skies are blue. I'm just having a nice day. So I live about 4 miles away from a town. So somebody's bought a manual today, so I might drive down to the town, post that, go in a little cafe I like, have some green tea. Don't forget to eat at some point as well during the whole day, and maybe then I'll get to bed. I try to get to bed before 10 as a rule these days, so I can be up early again. What I love about it is, before, when I was doing my building work, I knew the day, you know, and now I get surprises. Like, we're going the trip to Portugal, we're training with a guy called Johnny Cass, who I think is one of the best mind coaches, you know, on the planet.
I know Johnny.
Oh, he's amazing. So I phoned him up. I thought, who's the best person, you know, to work with? So I thought I'd pick the best people in the industry. I phoned him up and asked him, thinking he's going to say no, he hasn't got time, and he said yes. So to work with some of the best people in the industry is just amazing. So we're doing a little boot camp in Portugal in September with him. It's only going to be for about 25, but that's going to be, it's part of the fun thing as well, I suppose. You know, you've got to be having as well, I think, along the way, fun. So
yeah, I agree. So and a boot camp with Johnny Cass is always fun because his mindset stuff, his NLPs.
Yeah.
I'm Chris Howard trained for NLP stuff, and this Johnny Cass was one of the Chris Howard trainers. Although he never directly taught me, but did at some of the initial events like Breakthrough to Success. Yeah. But he's absolutely on fire, is Johnny Cass. Yeah. And he's Australian, isn't he?
Yeah.
He lives in Australia, but is he flying over to come to Portugal specifically?
Yeah, he flew over to our event. We did an event in April, so he agreed to come over to that. I think I had to pay his airfare, which is all right, you know.
Yep.
But he's going to fly back to London first, and we're flying over to Portugal. And he might do some training in England as well, we'll see. But he's just on fire. He's crazy as well. He's got this crazy. I love.
He is, yeah, definitely crazy. And that's really good as well. It's about living without limits. They're not even self-imposed limits usually. The limits that we think are put on us by other people, but aren't at all, because no one really cares. So it's just about you going and doing whatever it is that you want to go do. It's got a very funny story about hang gliding, which I'm sure...
I've heard that one. Yeah, that is quite hysterical, actually, isn't
very
it? Yeah.
Funny. The way that he does it, it's just excellent.
I met him first... 4 years ago, and part of the reason I stand up and speak is because of him, I would say.
Right.
So I've got to thank him for a lot, to be honest, and I do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm very thankful and very grateful to him. And
you can send him a copy of the podcast so he knows.
Yeah. Oh, great.
So, these days, how do you get educated? What is it that you're reading? What sort of stuff are you looking at? Is it marketing? Is it property? And who do you admire in that sort of realm as well?
Marketing's a big one for me, because I'm quite kind of into the events. We've got the houses, but Emily, my daughter, she's more kind of hands-on with that. And then we've got our property guy, Will. So I've had a bit of a shift over to marketing. And it's quite hard. You've got to be careful where you spend your cash. Again, because it's a lot of pork. So I did go to an event the other day by a guy called Chris Cardell, you know.
Yeah, I know Chris.
And he knows a lot about Facebook, and you can drown in that. So,
Chris just knows a lot about marketing, full stop. He's in the UK, he's one of the top guys, that's for sure.
Oh, he's smart, isn't he? So
he's really smart.
So I found him, and I thought if I can make a connection with him, so I went to an event with him, and I brought my property manager. That was last month. We went to London. And I read books. I just read books endlessly. Sometimes my wife is spare, because I tell you I buy a book every week, and I read a book every 2 weeks. So I've got this pile that's it's beginning to pile up.
Through.
Yeah, and so I said, if I ever retire, Jane, then that's the pile. So.
And so some people would ask you, Francis, why have you not retired? What is it that you need to complete?
Well, if you could see me and how young I am as well, Daniel, I'm the same as you. I'm 57, but I've always felt the same. I felt about 25, I think, kind of inside.
Yeah.
So, I've got the energy. I'm kind of healthy. When we got into the property first, kind of helping people, I found I had this kind of thing that I liked the properties. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed finding the rent-to-rents and talking with all the owners. But a thing I really love is if I can help a person. And there's people in the group, I better not say who, but I've had some calls of people saying that they were completely stuck and they've been going down this path trying to build this career for themselves. And we had it on the last event, there was actually two, and then they decided to get into rent-to-rent. And this for them is, it's the last kind of chance. It's either this or it's all over kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so they come into the group, I keep poking them, supporting them, sending them some more things, don't forget to do this. And when you spoke to the agent, you've got to remember to say that. And we spent hours on this. And then you see the person get a result. They get the first one. And there's one guy, he must be on property number 10 now, I suppose. And his life is transformed for him, his family.
Yeah.
I was talking to a guy online today. He's been doing it for a year. He was actually an agent. And he was doing deals with people and earning 10 or 12%. Now he switched his style over to doing rent to rent, and he's earning 60 to 70%, he says. So he's spending all that time. He was kind of stuck. In our group, there's 600, I think, now. And I'd say there's probably about 30 in there who I personally kind of helped a lot.
Yeah.
And it's transformed their lives completely. And I'm always having these things saying thank you and thank you. And that, for me, is what it's all about, you know. But of course, you've got to help yourself along the way, and your kids and everything else. It's all got to be good. And sometimes I work a bit too hard, and I stay up a bit too late doing things, you know. So it's not all great. There's the downside, you know. Everybody tells you that it's all perfect. They've got this perfect life. They're on Facebook, and everything's wonderful and great, you know. And you know that on the pond, they're like a swan. They're all nice and calm on the top, but underneath, they're paddling like crazy, trying to keep things up, like, you know.
Yeah.
And but overall, life is great, and I really enjoy kind of helping people. Yeah, that's my big thing, I think.
Got it. Okay. It's really interesting in these interviews that I do. I've done quite a few now.
Yeah.
And when you speak to people who can retire and don't need to work, we might need to do a bit of management here and there just to make sure it all comes in still. But they choose still to do what they do because they absolutely adore it, and it's not work. And I know people, it's just like a cliche, isn't it? Oh, do something you love and work will never be work anymore.
Yeah.
And so people try and do it, you know, like in The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. He talks about the woman who's a baker.
Oh, amazing book.
She bakes, she bakes cakes, and because that's a passion. And then 6 months in of starting a cake baking company,
easy for you.
She hates cakes.
Yeah.
She hates the smell. She has to get up at six. And so she did what she loved, but she wasn't getting the result that she wanted. And so it can be quite a difficult thing to quantify, to get exactly what you get your finger on it, if you like. So I'd be able to identify exactly what that is. And for me, for example, it's coaching. So I don't run training events. I've tried training events, and I've enjoyed them from the front, and I've enjoyed the interactivity, not quite knowing what's going to happen next. I enjoy that. But the coaching for me is what really gets me the results specifically, and that's why I do that.
Yeah.
And I love it. I'm sat on I've got like a sofa bed thing. It's one of those outdoor beds on the terrace here at the villa, and I do a lot of my coaching on that.
Oh.
I'll put a picture up, and it's just... It's awesome. I love sitting on there because it's like helping other people doing... It's just amazing being able to get that feeling again.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, completely.
What are some of the pitfalls that... Give me two pitfalls on rent-to-rent. Something that if I'm starting up doing rent-to-rent, that really I need to be careful of.
Contracts is one, I think, and making sure
contracts,
you've got everything's legal. That you've got to make sure the property's on the right mortgage products. You've got to make sure the landlord's got the correct insurances in place. You've got to make sure that all the insurances you've got, you know, are right for rent to rent. But the big one, I think, is contract, because I've seen some contracts of guys who've been on, you know, smother of fence, and the contracts have just been awful. So you really got to protect yourself. You've got to protect the people in the property, but also you've got to remember to protect the landlord, because it's a cliche, as well, that property isn't actually about the property, it's about people, and that's just so true. So I think that's the first big one. And the second one I've seen a lot of guys in our group is overwhelm, because they get into it first, and they get the first property, and it's great, they're really up for it. Then they get number two, and then they realise the first one is not 100% safe, so they've got to go back and try and fix that. And then they get some trouble with tenants, and they've got to try to fix that. And then by that time, they've got property number three, and they're a bit like, oh, overwhelm. So, so what we say in hindsight, because hindsight is good, isn't it? We say to people that even if you don't employ a property manager from day one, it's always good to start to make, you know, steps that way. So we've got this guy working for us, Will, and it feels like he works for us for free, because we've upped our admin fees every time somebody takes a room to £150 a month. Then Will gets paid pretty much all the admin fees. You know, you've got to structure it all right. But definitely, I think if you're not working with a business partner, is to start to think about employing a property manager, and you could just kind of ease them in, you know, to help you show some rooms at the start, and then to give them some more jobs to do, and some more jobs, and some more jobs. So making sure you get your legals right, and avoiding overwhelm would be my two big top tips. So
I'm just going to add a third one onto that, if I may. And it's when I speak events and I ask people who's got property, half the hands go up. Who's been on a property training course to talk about tenants, and like all the hands go down. I'm like, guys, you wouldn't jump in a car and drive a car without passing a test. Mm. Yet you're renting out a 100 grand house, and a tenant stopped paying rent. You don't know what a Section 8 is. You don't know what Section 21 is. You've got no idea how to do them, and you go around, you change the locks, so you've just broken the law. But, you know, if it goes to court, you're really going to get messed about in court. And it's like, why would you do that? And I recommend people go to RLA.org, Residential Landlord Association. Just go on a course, it's 80 quid, and it's like how to be a landlord. And it talks about what should be in your tenancy agreement, what shouldn't, what you can do, what you can't do, how you can evict, what you can't do.
Mm.
So important.
Yeah.
And I see, I cringe when I see stuff on Facebook about people's
advice. I've seen it. Well, what we thought to do in our support group, I thought if I can get some people in the support group or experts. So I've got a guy who's an expert in eviction, so I asked him along to the event so he's able to get into the group. So he kind of helps them all with that. We've got two guys who are experts in Article 4, which is the thing you've got to know about. So I invited them into the group.
Talk to me about Article 4 for people who don't know what that is.
Yeah. It's in certain parts of the country, you need a license, you need to get planning to operate a HMO. I haven't got time because it's quite a deep subject, but there's a lot of people get confused about Article 4, which is to do with planning and licensing, and the two things are completely different. So we thought if we could get some experts actually into the group, so I've actually got two. So they kind of interact with people. I've got the eviction guy, we've got a tax expert, we've got a solicitor type guy in the group. So I kind of get all these experts in, so you just got to ask. And we do advise people to do courses to get some more education, as you just said, it's the best thing.
Mm. And so on an Article 4, it's worth just checking if a property is in an Article 4 area.
Oh, yeah.
And if it is, then they need to find more information out about that.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then you just need a HMO license, effectively.
Yeah. HMO, I've always hated that term. Daniel. Mm. You know, to me, it just sounds like a house of multiple occupancy. It's almost like it sounds like a correction facility a bit to me.
A hovel, you know? Yeah.
That's not what nice, we all say, like it's a multi-lex. That's so much nicer.
We were thinking about small apartments, and we call them studios, but in the past they were bedsits.
Oh, bedsits as well, aren't it? Yeah, it's kind of stigmatized.
We call them studios now.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And, you know, I've got some studios myself, but I would never call them bedsits. Modern apartments in a modern block, you know. Okay, so you've got some free videos on your website. Just give me that website address again.
www.multiletcashflowsystem.com, and then you'll find the trainings that we do, the dates, the free stuff. We do some other events. We do events with agents. So that's another thing. We got this agent. So we asked his agent to come along to join us. And so he's actually in the group as well, and he gives a good kind of insight to how an agent thinks. So that's www.multiletcashflowsystem.com. And I've also got another site because I wrote a book. I don't know if I said, wrote a book last year, and that's called Mayhem, Murder and Multilets.
Yeah,
and
wonderful.
And
that's a great name, by the way.
Thank you. And so there's a website for that as well, which is www.mayhemmurderandmultilets.com. And that's
Perfect. Kind of
my story in the book as well, really.
Wonderful. And people can buy that book from that website, can they?
Yeah, it costs less on the website than Amazon. So.
Excellent. So I'd just like to personally thank you. I always love doing these interviews. It's eye-opening for me as someone who's on the other side and gone through it, to how other people are going through it and where that success has come from. But listening to some of the triggers that's pushed you into it as well, and then the systems that you've gone through and where you're going next, I just love it. And the fact that we're very similar in the sort of way that we want to help people.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is why I just appreciate you coming onto a podcast and being really open as well, and I love it.
Hmm.
I'm sure if people want you to come back, I'm going to ask people to ask questions, and then we'll get you back on again in another sort of 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, sure.
And we can delve in again and just see how things have progressed and changed, and maybe come up with some case studies that people have done and how they did it and what they did and so on. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I'd be glad to, yeah. I'd be glad to.
And in the meantime, you're off on holiday.
Apparently, yes. We're going tomorrow. And as we said, you know, we spoke earlier, my new computer broke down, so I switched over to my old one. I couldn't get the keyboard to work, so I switched to my laptop, couldn't get the sound to work. So the day before I go on holiday, I had a disastrous day. So we're supposedly not allowed to bring our computers with us, but I've got this notebook. It's really small, so I'm thinking I can probably sneak it in.
Sneak it on.
Yeah.
Well, the podcast won't go out until maybe 2 days, so
okay.
Hopefully we might not pick it up.
Yeah.
So, Ryan Francis, I'd like to just thank you again personally. I really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. It's been wonderful. Lots of information that people can implement straight away. I'm going to direct people to your website on my website, and I'd like to say thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ryan. It's been great to talk to you. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right.
Have a great holiday.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.